was made of this earth. I'm born of this earth. I breathe of this earth. And even with the pain, I believe in this earth. So I wake up every morning and I'm stepping on the floor. I wake up every morning and I'm stepping out the door. I got faith in the sky, faith in the one, faith in the people rocking underneath the sun. Cause every bit of land is a holy land, and every drop of water is a holy water, and every single child is a son or a daughter of the one earth mama and the one earth papa. So don't tell a man that he can't come here, cause he got brown eyes and a wavy kind of hair. And don't tell a woman that she can't go there, because she prays a little different to a God up there. You say you're a Christian cause God made you. You say you're a Muslim cause God made you. You say you're a Hindu and the next man a Jew. Then we all kill each other cause God told us to. No, hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Bonjour, bonjour.
Greetings and Gun Hei Fa Choi. Happy New Year. Happy Chinese New Year, Year of the Fire Rooster. What that holds, I don't know, but last night we went into the new moon. The moon's dark, and was reading something from the goddesscircle.net, and it says, it's an Aquarius new moon, and what it said about it is dramatic change, clearing of the old, new beginnings, powerful intentions, make your intentions, now it's good time. Rebellion, got that right. New solutions, and the biggest one was don't lose faith. And at times like this, it could be easy with, I have a rough time saying his name. I think he's the new Voldemort, but Winona LaDue kind of named him correctly, in my sense, calling him the predator in chief. It's kind of amazing that what went down this past week, the amount of directives and news seems to be more than a week's worth. It's more like a month's worth of news and changes. But I know we're going to persevere, and Predator-in-Chief's going to do well in bringing us all together in a mighty force, because there's way, as Michael Moore said, there's many more of us than there is him. So we just need to get together and stay together. I'm really happy today for my guest. We spoke with Amnesty International USA's Managing Director of Individuals at Risk Program, Zeke Johnson. And then we're going to speak with Heather Sue. She was at the Women's March in Washington, so we'll get an update on that. And then we're going to talk with Joel R. Kupperman, and he is the executive director of the New York Environmental Law and Justice Project and co-chair of the Environmental Justice Committee of the National Lawyers Guild. He is such a hardworking man, and I'm really grateful that he's taking his time out on this early Saturday morning when he may be able to get some much-needed rest. But he's coming on to Morning Eclectic with me, Earth Mom. And, finally introducing myself. So good morning, everyone. Greetings. And what I want to do now is go to our interview with Amnesty International with Zeke Johnson.
Based on Trump's decision to expedite the building of both pipelines, the Keystone XL and the Dakota Access Pipeline, Amnesty made a very clear statement on how it would impact and asking for some very basic things in order to comply with human rights standards. And I just want to repeat what you said, basically that the president should immediately withdraw his orders and respect the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' decision to carry out the EIS, the Environmental Impact Statement review of the pipeline, of the Dakota Access Pipeline, and he should commit to respect the right to protest at Standing Rock and everywhere else, and ensure that the Department of Justice opens an investigation into allegations of excessive force by authorities against those opposed to the Dakota Access Pipeline. And I'm wondering how you see those demands playing out. And then I want to talk to you about the injustices and the excessive force that you've seen and I've seen as well.
Great. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Our job at Amnesty International is to really stand in solidarity with the indigenous peoples who are leading this movement for human rights and environmental rights at Standing Rock and beyond. And so it's our job to push forward this agenda, even if Trump doesn't want to do it. And so we're focused on really concrete things that we can all do together to change the course of history and human rights with regard to Standing Rock. So one of the key things that we need everyone to do right now is to actually submit their own comments to the Army Corps' environmental review process. And you can do that really easily in a number of ways. You can do it through the Standing Rock Sioux Tribes website. You can do it through the website of the Indigenous Environmental Network. And you can also do it through the site of Amnesty USA. Well, if you're having any trouble through any of those websites, you can easily look up through a search engine the Army Corps of Engineers Environmental Impact Statement review of the Dakota Access Pipeline, and you can find the actual page that the Army has put up. And there you'll see the email address of the person that you should email. And so you can do that directly on your own if you prefer.
And I'll put that on the WBAI website as well and on my page.
That's
on the
right.
Website. Yeah, so we can get that out, because that at this point seems to be the, along with prayer, seems to be the biggest thing that any of us can do, isn't it?
Well, we're also really trying to focus people's attention on directly urging the sheriff of Morton County, Sheriff Kirchmeyer, to respect the rights to peaceful protest there in the Standing Rock area. And so people can call the sheriff's office and register, you know, their demand that the sheriff respect human rights and the right to protest. And you can also do that through Amnesty's website, or you can look up the Morton County Sheriff's Department online as well.
Okay. And again, I'll get that on the WBAI site, because those are two really quick things, and it should have an impact, would you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I think when people join together in unity and use the power of collective action, we can really accomplish great things. And now more than ever, we really have to band together and fight for human rights together.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything else heretofore seems to have been practiced. But, yeah, this is really showtime. Yeah. And, you know, I was curious. I was reading on the site that Amnesty has been out to Standing Rock 4 times. And I'm sure you've documented some of the excessive force.
That's right. Amnesty's role when we've been to Standing Rock is to serve as independent human rights observers and to document the things that we've seen and that other people have seen. And we've expressed our concerns about the use of excessive force to the Morton County Sheriff's Department, as well as to the Department of Justice. And it's so critical that the authorities in the United States and around the world respect the right to peaceful protest. That is an essential human right that makes the world a better place for all of us. So from Standing Rock to Egypt, everywhere in between, we've got to protect the right to protest.
What kind of a response did you get either from both Sheriff's Office of Morton County or the Department of Justice?
Well, we certainly haven't gotten the response that we've looked for. The Department of Justice hasn't opened an investigation, and we continue to be very concerned by the highly militarized police forces that are gathered at Standing Rock. We don't think that peaceful protesters should be met with things like armored vehicles, machine guns, and other types of equipment that's more suitable to a battlefield than to being out on the prairie of North Dakota.
Yeah, yeah. Has the Morton County Sheriff's Office answered or responded at all?
We've received no official response from Morton County Sheriff's Office.
Mm. Wow. And, you know, as you know, they've actually lied about different things that they've done. When and if, hopefully, some of this will go to court, then part of Amnesty's testimony would be included, possibly.
That's up to the folks that are involved in those lawsuits. I mean, all of our information is public out on our website, so anyone can read it, and anyone can take a review of the things that we've said and called for.
Yeah. Yeah. What was your take, your personal take on being out at Standing Rock?
Well, I think it's very important that people take to the streets and exercise their right to peacefully protest and to freedom mm-hmm. of expression. Mm-hmm. These are rights that are critical to, you know, functioning democracy and peace and security here in the United States and around the world. And those rights are under threat, and we've got to stand together and protect them.
And, you know, we also wanted to bring up my first experience with free speech zones was at the presidential convention that was held here in New York City, the Republican convention for George Bush. Before that, I had never seen or heard of them. And clearly, when I saw it, it was just a ploy to keep people away from the public, away from the sight of the media, and to keep them very contained. And I was wondering what Amnesty's take is on these, quote, free speech zones, unquote, and do we really need to abide by them, or is it just a matter of the people, of the police, policing us into them?
Well, I mean, we consider the world to be a free speech zone, and that people
Yay.
Are able to exercise their right to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly and peaceful protest wherever mm-hmm. they may be. We recognize that in certain circumstances, the authorities may need to be able to restrict certain areas for people to be in, and that can be okay as long as it's done in a necessary and proportionate way that facilitates the right to peaceful protest and freedom of expression rather than violates it. So it can be a situation-to-situation scenario,
mm-hmm.
But in general, people have the right to peacefully protest, peacefully assemble, and to speak their minds freely.
Yeah, perhaps in some areas there is a need to contain, but I don't think that area is in North Dakota like they're making it. Can you think of any reason, aside from protecting big oil, why the police is so militarized there against the water protectors?
Well, we've seen the militarization of police forces across the United States, you know, in the wake of, you know, their wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. For my understanding is that there is a surplus of military equipment that was distributed by the federal government to state and local authorities. And, you know, one of the things that's really concerning is that these state and local authorities aren't getting training in human rights. They aren't getting training in how to appropriately and legally police peaceful protests and make sure that they don't violate people's rights. So it's really, really important right now, I think, that law enforcement across the country make sure that they fully understand not only the domestic constitutional rights of people, but also their internationally recognized human rights.
That's really big, and that's really important. And it would seem now it's going the other way with this present administration kind of, you know, taking the side of police, whether right or wrong, and it seems to really be going into this whole militarized situation against people that do have a different opinion and want to make their voices heard.
Yeah, I think it's so important that people not see this as an issue of being either for or against the police. The police have a very important role to play in making sure that legitimate laws are upheld and facilitating freedom of expression, peaceful protest, and freedom of assembly. So I think it's so important that, you know, law enforcement make sure that they're upholding human rights and that they're really seen as people who are upholding the rule of law and making sure that we don't slide away from those super important fundamental human rights and civil rights that our nation really depends on, the right to peaceful assembly, the right to speak your mind freely. The police and the law enforcement authorities are really partners, I think, with civil society in making sure that those rights are upheld. And we need to get to that place where we're all unified together around human rights, and we won't let anyone attack those rights.
I'm so with you. Any closing words?
Yes, I just that for people to recognize that they can make an impact, that our actions can actually change the world. So please, a message to everyone, get involved. Go to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's website. Go to the Indigenous Environmental Network's website. Go to Amnesty USA's website. And from those websites, you can take action. You can make phone calls to government officials. You can engage in the Environmental Impact Statement review process with the Army. And by doing these things, you can really show people in positions of authority that we care about these issues and we really want them to change course. And by using that power of collective action, I truly believe that we can influence them and we can create a world where human rights are truly respected and protected for all people.
Thank you. Thank you for all your work and for your
things you want are real.
You have you to complete, and there is no deal. Too long. There's a permanent crease in your right and wrong. Stand.
There's a midget standing tall,
and the giant beside him about to fall.
Stand, yeah, I think we're going to be doing a lot of standing, kids. Wow. My next guest is Heather Sue. Heather is a water protector, and she's was at the march in Washington, D.C. on last Saturday. So I wanted to talk with Heather, find out about the march and what's going on. Heather, good morning.
Good morning, Alina.
Hi, honey. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. I want to hear about the march, your experience of it, and, well, let's start with what made you go.
Well, you know, I heard a little bit of what your last guest was saying, and I think just getting involved and being active, I feel like, you know, right now is the time to be visible and to be vigilant in our society and come together, you know, with people to stand. I was fortunate to be in Standing Rock and to be there with you, and you know, seeing people come together for one another, it's incredibly powerful. And I definitely, you know, of course, the Women's March is close to my heart as well. But I think any, you know, momentum we can create for change right now and for support is what's needed.
Yeah. Were you out the whole day on Saturday? What was it like being there?
You know, it was really hopeful. You know, it kind of, it made a lot of us that I was with, you know, just kind of feel good to know that there is such a strong resistance, to what's taking place right now. And, you know, not only resistance, but just support of, you know, standing up for one another and for our rights. It was, you know, the whole day, it was just such a smooth day, you know, at least just seeing all the people coming together, having that many people, marching with that many people, and seeing, you know, all different types of people that are just there to support and show that love. You know, it felt very loving.
That is excellent. And it wasn't only women, right? There were a lot of men that joined in the march?
There were so many men, and, you know, I mean, there were so many men, and there was a moment I had where I got a little choked up. I was taking photos of, you know, people, and there were so many great signs. And we had, you know, left the march later in the day. It was, you know, winding down. We had gotten around, you know, the sections of the main area that we could get to, because it was, of course, so incredibly packed, and the crowds just moved and moved. but we had been, you know, kind of leaving from everything, and there was this man and his, you know, father and his daughter crossing the street, and I asked if I could take their photo. And I took the photo, and then when I went to look at it, I really got choked up because he's just gazing at her so lovingly, and this little girl who's probably 5 years old, you know, has this amazing sign, and she's just looking right at me, and it just kind of, you know, into the camera, and it just felt so powerful, like such a powerful moment where, you know, the people are standing there for their children, for their daughters, for the future, for the next generation, and, you know, you can feel that support coming from all genders.
Jeez, that is so wonderful. And it started, like, the whole march started so simply, I think, with just a call on Facebook, and then it grew and blossomed into this really worldwide event. And having the women lead it, and the men coming in and following and being part of it, and all of us together, staying together for change and staying together for unity, just for what's right for Mother Earth, for all of us mm-hmm. on Mother Earth, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it just, you know, brings me back to, you know, to Standing Rock in so many ways, because, you know, there, that same respect for women
mm-hmm.
has really come through. And, you know, the message that women are sacred is, you know, it's coming through. And I think, you know, women are also kind of responding to that, and, you know, not, you know, we're going to stand up for things. We're going to stand up for what's happening right now. So it was a really good feeling for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, men and women are important, but what we bring to the table is that nurturing and love. I mean, you have the total opposite, but the total opposite of it on steroids with this predator in chief that is just looking at the bottom line of everything. And
right.
He's doing what he knows how to do, but it's amazing how out of touch he's is with true reality, because you know, everything cut and dice Mother Earth. His plans mm-hmm. for Mother Earth just make her, you know, this energy source, and cut her up,
yeah.
dice her up, use her, and then, you know, and done, that's it. And it's not like that. There's no flow, there's no reality. So I guess what we bring to that table is that softness and gentleness, and in that gentleness is that ultimate strength. And
yeah,
and it's amazing that, you know, the Women's March had this big effect that it had, brought all the men into it as well, and unites us as one, you know, just to go forward, and to go forward in a good way.
Absolutely. I think, you know, we all come from a woman, we come from our mothers, we come from, you know, a womb, we come from water in so many ways. And I think mm-hmm. that there's that really important reminder within it that it's hard for, I mean, in any case, no matter where you are, you can look at somebody and there's somebody's mother, daughter, brother, sister, you know?
Yeah.
And especially when you think about, you know, mothers and grandmothers and daughters. And I think that has, you know, hopefully allowed to come into people's minds where you can recognize in everyone else that you see, or in the other people that you see, that you know, we're all here for that same reason. And, you know, to feel the connection across, like, you know, kind of division, and getting mm-hmm. getting past the division that's being, you know, kind of placed on us in so many ways. I think that's a really important aspect to it. And I really felt that that day, you know.
That's gorgeous. Yeah, I've often said, you know, when over the years with the Iraq wars, both of them, and people, yeah, kill them and bomb them, and mm-hmm. and we're going to make it so much better for them. It's like they don't realize when we're going into a place and with this militarization that these people are just the same as you. They have
right.
husbands, wives, they have children, they have mothers, they have fathers. And if you even thought about it for a minute, if that was happening to you, how would you feel? Yeah, we don't have that sense of that, but it's waking up now. How long did you march? What time did you start? What time did you finish? How far did you go?
Well, I guess it was Oh, man, I don't.
No worries. I don't
even
mean to
remember.
Put you on the spot.
No, and I have a friend who had, like, her Fitbit, and I think she said it was, like, so many kilometers, and maybe it was, like, I want to say, like, 6.5 miles or something.
Really?
I'm not even sure. Yeah, but it took all day. The trains were packed coming in, getting down into the area and getting, we exited early and then walked down to meet up to the march. And I think a lot of people ended up doing that at certain points because, the trains were just, taking longer than usual, of course, with all just the sheer amount of people. And, talking to women on the trains, even there were women that had, been traveling since midnight, people that had been on buses all night, overnight to get there. And they were just going to turn right back around and go back to, their various, towns and stuff. And that momentum was incredible. I just think it was just such a great day. So it was a pretty long day, several hours for sure. And then just, keeping that presence of mind and kind of just that calmness of, okay, unfortunately there weren't, and there's still not enough bathrooms, certain things that are just kind of, you're just kind of going to be there and you're going to just walk and be together and, maybe experience, it's not always comfortable, but we're showing up and we're present. And that was definitely there.
Mm. Thank you for doing it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Any last words?
Water is life.
Yeah, Minnie Riccioni, girl.
Minnie Riccioni.
Oh, be well. I hope to see you soon.
Okay, me too. It's good talking to you.
Same here, Heather. Thank you. That was Heather Sue, who did attend the march in D.C. last Saturday. You're listening to Morning Eclectic with Earth Mom. So one of the first things that the Predator-in-Chief did was send a directive to move forward more quickly and to move forward with the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Keystone XL Pipeline. And I want to play for you a response to that Chase Ironeyes, an attorney and activist with the Lakota People's Law Project, said on CBS. And before I do that, I just want to read to you another reaction to it from Dave Archambault, the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. And part of what he said is, this change in course is arbitrary and without justification. The law requires that changes in agency positions be backed by new circumstances or new evidence, not simply by the president's whim. He went on to say, it makes it even more difficult when one considers the close personal ties you and your associates have had with Energy Transfer Partners. And Sunoco, and Trump, Trump did have stock in Energy Transfer Partners, and I think he still does in Sunoco, but clearly his ties to big oil are there. There's no doubt about that. And at what Zeke Johnson of Amnesty was saying is that you can help as well. And you can help by going to the Amnesty website. And there are two actions you can take on that. And that's amnestyusa.org. And, you can go to lakotalaw.org and you go to the actions there and you can, do an online environmental impact statement, and you can put the reasons why. And the reasons really why is that this is going to endanger the water. Firstly, for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, 15 to 18 million people down the river, because it's not an if when these pipes break, it's a when. And there's lots of history of them breaking. Even in the last few days, different pipes have been breaking. But I wanted to play the piece now from Chase Ironeyes, and this is from CBS.
It's clear that Donald Trump is going to represent some of the corporate interests that are seeking to privatize and further stratify the economic injustice that is happening right now on the ground in the state of North Dakota in the most significant struggle we feel since the civil rights era, since the armed wounded knee occupation, since the Occupy movement. But now he's signaling that he's willing to take it to the next level, and it's something I think that we on the ground anticipated, but it's going to become a stark and harsh reality. But we are prepared for the fight because we feel that, you know, this is the time where Americans need to stand up for clean water. We need to stand up for our right to determine our own destiny, really to uphold some of the truths that we declare to be self-evident. We need to uphold our constitutional rights, because out here on the ground, some of those rights are being violated. Our First Amendment right to free speech and to peaceably assemble. The Army Corps has already indicated it would want to create free speech zones. And so that's something that we've never heard of. In our interpretation, the entire country is a free speech zone. We have the most militarized roadblock that we've ever seen in North Dakota history. We have illegal searches, seizures, and a militarized surveillance state happening right now in the heartland of America. So Standing Rock is going to become a focal point for all of these struggles. America needs to understand that this is where the fight starts against the encroachment upon women's rights, women's sovereignty over their own body, our labor concerns, those who are considered illegal, those who can say who is a patriot, a traitor, a terrorist. All that is going to come down to play right here in North Dakota, because we have people who, in our minds, we are patriots. We are standing up for national security. I mean, who is the patriot? The person who is polluting our water and selling our oil and minerals to China for their private benefit? Or is it the people in an unarmed revolutionary fashion who are willing to protect those resources for our posterity and for the integrity of our nations? Those questions are going to be answered here at Standing Rock.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
You are listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. I'm Earth Mom, a.k.a. Helena, and it's Morning Eclectic. And we're going to talk to our next guest, who is Joel Kupperin. He is the executive director of the New York Environmental Law and Justice Project and co-chair of the Environmental Justice Committee of the National Lawyers Guild. Good morning, Joel.
Good morning.
You sound bright and chipper. Thanks for getting up and being here, because I think I have a sense of how hard you work in trying to get you during the week sometimes. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I feel honored. And I guess a lot of my mentoring came from the airwaves emanating out of WBAI.
The University on the Air, eh?
Yes.
And you've helped us a lot over the years. I know you've been on Ken's show, Ken Gale, Ecologic, and it seems now with this Predator-in-Chief, you're going to be busier than you've ever been.
On all fronts. I wear a few hats at the Guild, one being the co-chair of the Environmental Justice Committee on the Indigenous Rights Committee, mm-hmm. and also Mass Defense. I'm the one out there that you see walking the streets with a green hat, as a legal observer. And we're really proud to be part of Standing Rock, including the Water Protectors Legal Collective.
That is awesome. Boy, and I have questions for you about all that. Where to begin? I want to talk to you about the directives that Trump put out about pushing forward DAPL and the Keystone. I want to talk to you about the water protectors. I'll just give you a brief overview. And I want to talk to you about this thing he's putting out now about having the reservations work with the states rather than federally. And, you know, how does it work for a sovereign tribe and a treaty tribe? We're going to do all this in 20 minutes. Really? And also the rights of activists, because I think that's something we all need to know now. And, it, you know, when you get arrested, what happens? At Standing Rock, I knew I had the legal number written on my arm, and I knew that would happen. But in New York City, in anywhere in the country, what does an activist do when they get arrested? What should they do?
The main thing is, one is to remain silent, listening to all those dull detective movies that you've seen. The other is to make sure that the that your legal team, legal observers out there, your support people know that you're in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did, like, if let's say I went to a DAPL rally or a Defund DAPL, and by the way, everybody, defunddapl.org, go to it, check it out, because if we take the money out of them in a way, it gets the wind out of their sails. This is what these people understand. So if I go to a Defund DAPL rally, and what if there's no observers there?
It's important that people can act as observers without the hat. It's important also we respect the law of physics. Many times protesters have told me that the cop lifted them up and they put them over the stanchion and they couldn't do that. And I said, well, if they did, it's a question whether they shouldn't or not. So one word of caution, I guess, is that you should respect that physical force. But as an being on the site, you should make sure that if you can, take pictures. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's important to get names of witnesses that did take pictures, and also to make sure that you get any of the officers' badge numbers if possible.
Okay, that's great. Thank you for that, because I think that's something we all need to know now. Let's go to Standing Rock. So what recourse does everyone have? How important is the environmental impact statement still? Because President Obama stopped the easement until this statement was taken. Can it still maybe go for another 18 months till they do it? Or does the new Predator-in-Chief have the power to go through this and make it happen faster, even not even pay attention to it?
I and others believe that he can't push it through that fast. We still have the land of law. What's also encouraging for me as a lawyer that deals a lot with government, and usually on our side, we usually try to bring government to intervene, you know, rather than stopping the environmental areas. So the rule of law is that it's not just vested in one person. There's procedures to follow. And also, if we look at his memorandum, not just, you know, his directive, mm-hmm. it still states that all laws have to be respected, including state and federal laws. So in some ways, that's our protection. We have to really be forceful legally and politically in pushing those few lines that remain there in those directives.
And, you know, in upholding the law, does it change now because there are so many of the other party in the House and in the Senate and probably on the Supreme Court? What I was thinking, I mean, could this all be a total nightmare because the people that have the say now are all, or many of them, are of like mind and could push a lot of this horrible stuff through?
Well, I think it's more a like mind than before. But we face this. This has been the problem for many, many years. The laws that protect us are slowly going to change. EPA has been basically under lockdown right now. So it's our mantra, the Law Project, is a good law without enforcement is almost worse than any law. So what we have here is not to push the law, but we've learned before that the Department of Justice and other agencies, sometimes there's a lag, and many times it was a bad lag, and now we hope that it's a better lag. That the EA environmental impact statement still could be argued that it's got to take a process. All those comments that your listeners have been asked to comment, the Army Corps has to answer them, and also there's got to be some consultation with the nations. So the process we could use to push, as you know, and to make this thing last as long as possible.
Yeah.
And I just got to say that what concerns me, and I think there's a lot of people talking about the actual, you know, what's going on at Standing Rock, and the pipeline, XL Pipeline. I've been focusing on all the small pipelines and all the other small projects and construction proposals that are going on, and we really have to not forget those. And the Guild is trying to take all this information that we got from these two pipelines and using it from the largest to the smallest projects and offering legal support for people opposing those.
Yeah, I'm so with you. I mean, my sense of Standing Rock is that, yes, it's Standing Rock. It's the focal point. However, it stands for every pipeline. It stands for the native nation's sovereignty. It stands for all environmental movements because it's all about honoring Mother Earth. It happened to start and be there where all the native nations converged, all the allies came, but it clearly does not begin and end there. And I'm at fault for not really reporting about the other ones, which I'm going to get on. Perhaps you'll come back on and we can talk about that.
And the important thing is that we've learned is that opposition to bad projects, and it could do with fracking, mining, luxury housing going in on fragile areas, is for the people to speak out and comment in the beginning. It's not a panacea, but it's really important not to rely on lawsuits later. And what we're setting up through the Guild is support for people to make those objections on paper and really, really punctuate the law, and they also bring in experts to show the environmental damage. And also, I just want to say, it's ironic in a way with these pipelines is that there's been a lot of respect and claims of respect for private property, and it's just sort of washed away by the eminent domain that's been used to push these things through. Mm. So there's a lot of contradictions that are there. And also, it's important to point out that it's the people in Nebraska in the pipeline that really was the last hurdle and the last straw that stopped that pipeline, and the people in Nebraska are ready to go back into court again.
Hmm.
So it sometimes there's especially with a long project, it could be one or two places that could be the juggernaut.
I see. Wow. With the eminent domain, I mean, that brings up the whole other thing with the treaty land where, with Standing Rock and with DAPL. And that land was given to the native people and then they tried to take it away, but the tribes never agreed to it. Essentially, it is their land.
Yes. And we've been going back on the U.S. government has been taking away land more and more, giving up on the treaty law that we signed over and over again.
Uh-huh.
And as a matter of fact, we're working with the Ramapo Nation now in Mahwah, New Jersey, trying to protect their right to assemble and to pray on 13 acres in the town. The town has served them with violations saying that they don't have permits to have teepees and totems at their site. At one time, up to 8 cop cars have come to that site to deliver the environmental violation warnings.
Mm.
So the fight continues, not just out in North Dakota, but right here in New Jersey.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's all over. It's all over. Right. And can you speak to this idea that Trump put out about having the different tribes, the different nations, the reservations not be federal but kind of be state? Could that even happen?
At this point, anything could happen. Unfortunately, we've seen the manipulation of the law, and also I just want to say it's taking away their collective right. I think the fight right now is individual versus collective. We've worked on cases in Fort Berthold, which is right down the road from Standing Rock,
mm-hmm.
and part of the problem is that with the it's a similar thing that's been going on in Haiti even. Is taking collective land ownership and trying to divide it up into individual titles and then basically chipping away at that collective right to the land and the use of the land. So we're very fearful that we don't want this to happen. We've seen in some places where the states have been the main protectors of the property. We're looking now to California to put up a lot of the defenses for environmental resources. But yet we know that there's some states that are just willing to, you know, chip away at this collective spirit. So,
is there a way for this, for the Native Nations to take this to the world court with the United States not living up to the Constitution, not living up to the bargains and deals and promises that they made?
Yes, and I think as many Indigenous leaders pointed out, that the problem here is, you know, there's water rights. There's environmental rights, but also there's Indigenous rights. And we've seen it's come to a head now that these rights are being trampled upon. And they're definitely international treaty and international body rights that they can appeal to. And they have. And we've helped with some of those petitions.
'Cause, yeah.
The Rapporteur for Water from the UN has been out to Standing Rock and has been out elsewhere. And what's also concerned, the use of international law, is even protection of the protesters. What alarms me the most, what I've heard in the news, is that Trump has said that, you know, that torture is okay.
Yeah.
And it's, I think, galvanized a lot of other countries to finally come out and say he's gone too far. And I think it's really important to make sure that our focus is not just local, but on, you know, on the international front, and to seek international allies.
Yeah, clearly, we need that. It's definitely not just the U.S. Let his focus be on America.
Right, and I know it's such a short time, but people could really help on almost on any environmental, you know, situations. In New York City, there's like unfettered construction that's going on, and we believe that it's that construction that's causing so many public health problems. And it's really important for New Yorkers, your listeners out there, mm-hmm. to get involved locally on local projects. And really, it's this power in numbers, this critical, you know, critical defense is a critical mass. So we're going to be, you know, there's many, many groups out there that are fighting some of the new zoning that's taking place. It's basically pushing people off off the land. And what it comes down to is protecting the commons versus private property. And I think that's what we have to really look back to. And just, you know, with all this distress that's going on, I was in Washington. I was one of the legal observers there. And it was the strength and the power that came out of that force. And on many levels, it's the state and local people we have to depend on, that you mentioned, the change in the law, but also their politicals, and many of them are smelling that wind that's out there. And I think what came out of Washington, all those demonstrations, is an influence on not only just the politicals, also the many judges that are out there.
So all the local judges around the land?
Yes. And a lot of them are bad, and I think that's part of the problem, and that's where lawyers start losing their hair and pulling their gray out. that we just lost a decision where we showed that there was lead on a piece of property and there was going to be totally excessive noise and dust. The lower judge said, yes, you totally proved your point. You brought in this in. Mm-hmm. You brought enough evidence in. The higher court said that we're giving deference to, you know, to the agencies. But they're political animals, and I think we really have to show and garner around the people that are out there that are leading the fight.
Are there is there information on your websites about different local things that are happening where people can get involved in?
Yes, it's www.nyenvirolaw.org, and people can go to the nlg.org website and look up the Environmental Justice Committee. But we'll be getting word out, and there's many, many good groups and many, many seminars. But the National Lawyers Guild wants to continue. We've been here around for many, many years to act as the legal arm for many of the people in the movement, including the protesters out at Standing Rock and elsewhere.
One good thing about the water protectors is that now, just recently, they are allowed to have legal defense outside of North Dakota. They can get local lawyers, which they can get more help, because there's over 600 people that were arrested. I know of some people. There were people that were giving testimony about when they came and took down the camp of 1851. That was just this past week or so, and other people that are going back for trial this month.
Yeah, I think the first lawyer that was signed in was a guild lawyer from Minnesota.
Oh, that's great.
So we're proud of that. And I want to give a shout-out to Marty Stola. He's been defending many people at fighting the Spectra Pipeline,
mm-hmm.
Which is right up near Indian Point. And Dave Dorfman, another guild member, has been fearlessly and valiantly defending a lot of arrestees. And being up at 6:30 is okay, because there's many times I get calls at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning when I hear about the arrest to try to arrange legal, you know, coverage for people.
Oh, you are a good soul. You really are. Thank you. We have about 2.5 minutes. I'm going to give you that time because I want you to talk, and I do hope you will come back on this show.
I definitely look forward to coming back.
Good, good. We'll talk more local, too.
Right. There's a lot of information out there in a lot of sites in terms of what the law states and doesn't state, and actually I really urge people to read the environmental impact statement request. I ask people to actually participate in these cases and even their local cases. Our middle name, we make sure that it's the New York Environmental Law Justice Project, that we want to make sure that the justice component of it is that many times environmental actions take place without looking at protecting the most vulnerable people that are out there, and that's really, really important to do.
Yeah.
And I also think that what's happening in the United States, we should look elsewhere. We also do work in Haiti and other places, and we really have to be aware that if we put up some of the roadblocks to bad mining or bad extraction or whatever, that they're going to go elsewhere. And that's happened in Haiti and in other countries. When there's gold found in places, many times just mining companies come in and just push people off the land. We've seen that in Guatemala, Honduras, and elsewhere. And I think it's important for people to think locally, globally, and act locally and globally. So
I'm so with you, yeah. It nothing's self-contained, I mean.
Right, and also it's important to beware of false solutions. The new power plants, some people are saying it's green energy. There's no way. All these people are supporting what's happening on Standing Rock. They should realize that the uranium that comes to fuel these so-called clean nuke plants come from Lakota and Navajo lands, and the people have been tainted for years by the bad mining and the residue that's there. And now New York State wants to import hydropower as an alternative, and we've learned that power that comes in from Canada results in flooding of many, many lands, including Cree lands, that we've actually forcing people off the land up there. So as environmentalists, we should really be concerned of where the material, the energy is coming from, how it's used, and where it's going to, and make sure that health and safety of all those people that are making this stuff and also dealing with the waste are protected. We shouldn't just be concerned about the green label that goes onto a product, onto a building, that it's really important to make sure that we look at the full spectrum and the full life of an item, a product.
Thank you, Joel Kupperman. You are awesome. Thank you. Please come back.
Okay. Thank you very much, and I feel honored to be on this morning.
Anytime you want to be on, just say the word. You're here. Thank
okay.
you so much. Thank you for all you do.
Okay,
thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Thank you, Sean Rhodes. Next week, there's a Bob Marley special. We won't be on. Week after, we go into Fun Drive, so we'll see what's going on with that. Stay vigilant, and please go to, which is the quickest website, well, go to NewYorkEnviroLaw.org, NLG.org, National Lawyers Guild, and then look up Enviro Justice Committee. And I think we can all learn a lot from that. Also, please submit a statement for the environmental impact statement for the Dakota Access Pipeline. That is lakotalaw.org/action/DAPL, D-A-P-L. You can also go to Amnesty International USA site, and there's a click-through on that for the environmental impact statement for DAPL. There is also a click-through to write a letter to the sheriff of Morton County to treat the water protectors and with respect and treat them fairly as opposed to this brute force that's been going on. I love you all. I wish you well, and see you when I see you. Be well, kids.
My love, we're blown.